Good afternoon, folks. It's that time of the day again. Time for the elephant in the room here on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. This is your host. He's back for today. Sam DeMarco in studio. And I have Keith Schmidt with me. Keith, longtime Republican strategist, you know, former Western Pennsylvania director for Senator Rick Santorum. And we also have my favorite executive director in the entire state, and that's John Schneider, the best executive director of any Republican committee in this Commonwealth.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, John. And we're also, I'm here today. It's been great to see him again. And that is dazzling dandy Daryl Grandy.
Great to see you again, Sam.
The man that makes the magic happen. How you doing, Daryl?
Doing all right. It's great to see you, Sam.
Folks,
you're here for your old job, aren't you?
Not quite, yeah. But hey, yeah, nice try. Nice try, my friend. But yeah. Folks, we're going to have a great show for you today. For some reason, John Schneider and Keith Schmidt wanted to punish you is for listening. So they asked me to come in and to talk a little bit about, you know, my transition and what I'm doing and, you know, why you haven't heard me on the air, you know, for the past number of weeks and things of that and where we go from here. So, hey, let's kick this off. I'm going to turn it over to Keith and let's get this show started, man.
Your enthusiasm is always to be noted. It's like I want to drink what he drinks, whatever it is. I want a little sip of that rock gut because he's always so positive, so energetic. And to a degree, we're not going to miss him. I mean, we're gonna miss him because his role has changed here in Allegheny County in this part of Pennsylvania. But it's actually grown in some respects in Republican. In Republican circles, because our newly elected United States Senator has named him the director here in southwestern Pennsylvania, which is such a key part of Pennsylvania in the body politic and government and industry. It's really the two anchor offices are always the Southeast and the Southwest. And in my experience, the Southwest often is the siding for the future of statewide officials. So it's if they perform well and they communicate well and answer the people's call and have good community service and constituent service and projects, then that helps return the good Mr. McCormick back for another 6 years. So you have a tall order. It's a much different approach than in D.C. where it's all pretty much legislation. Here it's about making sure we're getting the fair share of the pie and making sure you're talking to every level of government, local, county governments, dealing with mayors, dealing with other congressmen that represent this part of the state. And pretty much, Sam, I mean, it goes without saying, you're from Central Casting. And there, if you had to put a resume together of somebody that would be a perfect fit for this position, I think we found it in you. So congratulations on a wonderful new gig as the director of the Southwest Pennsylvania office for our new Senator David McCormick. And but really today, I kind of want to look back. I mean, you are the kind of the 800-pound gorilla of Republican politics in this side of the state for a long time, at least in the last, 5 years?
Another weight crack.
Watch that. Check that. But at least for the last 5 years now, you were both at the same time.
Six years that you were both? Yes,
okay,
we both.
So I know you started as our county councilman back in 15?
2016. I was elected in 2015, sworn
19,
in 16,
and then elected again in 23.
Yep, 22.
23.
No, 22.
Why 22?
Yeah, here's what happened was...
Something happened.
Typically at RCAC in the past, they elected new chairmen or did the reorganizations in the presidential election years. But I thought that was such a critical election, you know, that we shouldn't be changing leadership in the middle of the game there. So one of the things I did back in 2020, when I was elected the second time, I took and had the bylaws changed. And obviously the body votes on that, right? The committee votes on that. But they changed the bylaws to move the reorganization efforts to the gubernatorial year. So that's why, you know, you have a 4-year term. My first election in 2019, I was filling the remaining term of D. Raja, who had stepped down. And so I had about a year to go. And then in 2020, I ran for my own term. But because we changed the bylaws, it was a 2-year term. And then in 2022, I ran for the third time and was elected then as well. But that's a 4-year term. that isn't up until 2026, and I'm stepping down early to take this position with Senator McCormick.
Well, we're both right here because actually that's a good clarification, but when I was talking about 15, 19, and 23, I was talking about county council. You were originally elected in 15, reelected in 19, reelected in 23. So the crossover has been, 6 years that you've had both posts for over six years?
Right.
Which is interesting because in a lot of counties, it'd be two different individuals, and either of those are pulpits to be the Republican voice. They were blended, so you were the unique Republican voice. There was no one else to go to. You're the only person that represented all of Allegheny County on both sides of the aisle as a county councilman, and then obviously the standard bearer for our party. Tell me a little bit about those two positions and tell me how much you're going to miss doing that.
Well, let me take a step back. And one, I want to thank all of our listeners and the people of Allegheny County for blessing me by giving me the opportunity to represent them as their at-large member on Allegheny County Council. I mean, typically what happens is it's the top two vote getters. It's not
correct.
Delegated or relegated to Republican and Democrat. But it's the top two vote getters, but they can't be from the same party, you know, that are elected. And, you know, the reason I ran was I saw at the time, this is Rich Fitzgerald's first term. You know, we had folks, but there was a lot of fighting that was taking place on county council. I saw Republicans voting against drilling, you know, like out at the airport and Deer Lakes and things like that. And I just thought, you know, I wanted to help the Republican Party. And I thought to do so, it would help if we could show them that we could govern. You know, so when Heather Heidelbaugh decided that she wasn't going to run for re-election, it created an opportunity, the at-large position, and I believed representing the entire county and having that bully pulpit, so to speak, would give me the opportunity to speak on behalf of Republicans. And I was determined to try to be as professional as I could, to focus on promoting business, you know, and economic vitality, because I believe if a man or woman can feed their family or put a roof over their family's heads, a lot of the other problems they have in life are small or insignificant in comparison, okay? So that was really what got me, you know, into that. And
did you have competition in that first race when Heather stood down?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Prior to actually on the ballot,
all right,
there were a number of people that wanted to run for this seat,
okay?
But then they asked to meet me, and then I met them, and then they all dropped out.
Okay.
Tell the folks here how much Heather Heidelbaugh spent on that at-large run when you ran her campaign.
I don't remember, but it was a sizable amount of money.
Yeah,
I don't think you spent that on any of your races.
No, I spent less than $1,500 to win the seat.
Yes. Come on.
Yeah, no, yes, less than $1,500.
In 2015, Keith, you won that seat with less than $1,500. You couldn't even hire me.
In 2015, I won with 63,000 votes. In 2019, I won with 91,000 votes. Wow. In 2023, I had 151,000 votes. And do you know, I never bought a yard sign. I never built a website.
Apparently you showed up. You know, apparently you were a media darling.
You show up and you do the job.
From what I hear.
You do the job and you stand up for the people, the taxpayers of Allegheny County, and they reward you with their confidence.
Tell me about
vote.
A bully pulpit, because we're 2-1. We're in registration. We're down 2-1. Pretty much these positions are important to have a voice in the decisions that are being made, even have a voice in the majority. I know the majority is Democrat and has been for the entirety of county council, but if you want to influence them, you have to go right to the public and you have to make some noise. And you seem not only to be good at it, you have fun with this. This is something that you do well. And is that something you're going to miss, that banter with the press? And tell me a little bit about your relationship with the press through the years.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I coming in, you know, the first time, I didn't know what it was going to be like dealing with the press, right?
Sure.
Now, prior to this, I'd been the president of a grassroots organization, a Tea Party group called Veterans and Patriots United, where I'd been the president for 6 years. So I had some experience talking to the press and things like this. But, you know, one of the things that early on that I determined is that I needed to be myself, okay? You have all kinds of people trying to influence you one way or another, right, when it comes to voting or positions on issues and things like this. I decided that I was going to be myself. I was going to try to do the right thing, always do the right thing. And, you know, the only person I felt that I had to please was the guy I saw in the mirror, because that's who I slept with at night, okay?
Sure.
And if you try to please all these other people, you're not going to be yourself. You're inevitably going to disappoint others, right? And you're going to be unhappy with yourself. So I committed myself to trying to learn as much as I possibly could about the issues. And I've always been, you know, diligent about doing research and things of that nature, and then making the best decision I could. When you're elected, when you're running, you're a D or an R or an I by your name, but when you're elected, you represent all the people. So when I was there serving on county council, decisions I made from a voting perspective, I made with respect to all of the citizens and residents of Allegheny County. Now, in regards to the press, you know, I learned early on too that you can't control what they ask you, but you can control what you say, your answers. So that's how I've tried to conduct myself, and I've developed a good relationship. I would say in many cases, almost like a great relationship with many of the folks in the press, because I always gave them the comments that they would make was, I always gave them something thoughtful. They knew that it was sincere, you know, coming from the heart and things of that nature. But I talked to everybody, even reporters who, you know, weren't necessarily friendly to our side. And that's because the people you represent, you have no idea how they get their news or how they consume
their
news.
You were the J.D. Vance of Allegheny County. You were always ready for a microphone or an interview, and you would grant it. And let me tell you, your reputation grew within the ranks, because sometimes that's all they need. They need the story, and they can't actually run a story without the other side. So you
exactly.
you were never stealth. But one of the things I did admire about you, and I never had to get you on the phone and give you, like, hey, I'll give you some sage advice. Don't muddy the water. When you had an issue, you never took the bait. They always you have to control the interview, because
exactly.
they're going to want to put you. They're going to want to ask a question that's what they're going to print. But you always had you had something on your mind. You wanted to persuade to them, and you wouldn't take the bait. You said, that's not why I'm here today. I'm here today to talk about X. I'm here to talk about. You'd go back to the issue, so you can't print anything else but this, because I'm not going to give you those other choices.
Back in my Tea Party days, I attended training from American Majority Action. And it was the best training I've ever had. And, you know, they talked about public speaking and dealing with the media. And they talked about how frustrating it was for some viewers, because they'd see a reporter ask a candidate a question and then, or an elected official question, and then they'd answer it, but they wouldn't answer that question.
Sure.
And they were just explaining that you use that opportunity. You understand that the media is using you, okay? It's time for you to use them as well, to take and use that opportunity to get the message out that you would like to convey. And that's why I had no problem many times with folks, whether it be on television or in print. You know, I would say, hey, listen, I reject that, the premise of your question.
Well, it's interesting when dealing with the press. I don't know that I can name any county council president. It's an esteemed position, and I'm sure there's been people of great stature that held that position. But in the unique position of being the minority member at large, in the public's eye, you match up against whoever the county executive is. You're the Republican voice. They're the Democratic
yes,
voice.
Yes, I'm the voice of opposition.
You've basically served under Rich Fitzgerald and Sarah Innamorato, two very different approaches. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with both of these people and their effect on the county and county government.
Okay. In regards to Rich Fitzgerald, you know, when I was running back in 2015, he had some well-publicized, headbutting with some of the members of council and things like that. I mean, he had proposed, he had asked all the members on these boards to submit to him undated resignation letters that he would be able to pull anytime he wanted and things like that. I know my predecessor, had some well-publicized battles with him, okay? But when I was elected to the primary in 2015, he called me the next day, congratulated me, and asked to get together for coffee. So we met a week later for coffee, and we actually bonded over our mutual distrust of lawyers and how they seemed to get in the way. You know, some of the things he wanted to do,
ground.
Me, because I was in sales, and it seemed like there was always order prevention more than helping me secure orders, right? And so, but we exchanged personal information there, so our cell phone numbers, personal emails, and I said, if we're able to communicate like this, you know, you never have to worry about waking up in the morning and seeing an attack from me in the press that you didn't see coming. If I have a problem with you, I'll call you. And I said, and if you have a problem with me, please call me, right? And we were able to maintain that for 8 years.
Wow.
I can't if there was legislation coming out that was going to be introduced that may have been contentious or, you know, controversial, he would call me and give me a heads up and say, I want to give you a heads up. This is going to be coming out, blah, 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 the whole bit. And I'd have the opportunity to ask questions, or to be able to see things, to be able to look at it or whatever, and be able to give my feedback. Now, I can't tell you the number of times where they actually changed stuff or pulled things back because of the objections or, you know, the problems that I had with it. And then there were other times where I wasn't able to get anything changed or whatever. But you know what? At least we were able to have our say.
So it was never personal. You had a sense of professional decorum. You didn't necessarily agree with each other, but it seems to like you respected each other.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, we communicated.
Sure.
Right? And your point was exactly. Many times we didn't agree on issues, you know, on many issues, but it was never personal.
Yeah. And okay? When people got frustrated, I remember you, talking to people when they were frustrated that you were too close to Rich Fitzgerald. I said, in the end, we're down 2-1. We're a minority in this. We need a voice at the table. Quite frankly, it's a microcosm in my day of the Tip O'Neill, Ronald Reagan. The government ran very smoothly during that era because they fought the fight, but they respected each other and they communicated and advanced the ball.
And see, this is what a lot of folks on the outside don't understand. To me, my goal or objective was it's about getting things done, okay? And, you know, going out to the media to just call the other guy names or to criticize, that doesn't get anything done. So there's some folks out there that may like that, but it's not productive.
Sure.
And it's not effective, okay? So, you know, in the 8 years I was there, we never had a argument per se. We had many disagreements, but we would talk, you know, through them and things like that. Sometimes I would see his position. Sometimes he would see mine, okay? But it was all about communication. And I think what made Rich, you know, such a good partner was Rich had been a county councilman.
Right, exactly.
So he had been there 11 years before running to be county executive.
Correct.
So he had respect for what we were doing and the role we played. And I can tell you, there's not a groundbreaking or some or sort of thing that we didn't go to where he didn't recognize county council's role in helping balance the budget or, you know, get by without a tax increase or
You recently stood down because of your new position with as director here in southwestern Pennsylvania for our newly elected senator. But you did, before you stepped down, spend a full year, at least a little over a full year, with the new county executive, Sarah Innamorato. I'm sure there's some differences of approach. Give us a scorecard and tell us a little bit about that relationship and how you think she's doing as our county executive.
A couple things there, okay? First of all, anybody that meets Sarah, all right, she's a very nice and pleasant you know, young lady, you know, very personable.
Right.
When she was on the state house, I mean, and I would see her at legislative receptions or other things where you're being recognized by folks, she never failed to come up and smile on her face and say hello and be very friendly, okay? But I don't have any relationship and didn't on county council. From the time she was elected, she never, until the time I left, never ever reached out.
Wow.
To have a meeting with me to ask, you know, what was important to me or to the folks that I represented, you know, or any of those things, right?
You would think some of her advisors, she might have, it's a new position for her. She was a state official, not a county official, unlike her predecessor who spent 11 years on council. Yep. You would think somebody would give her some sage advice and say, hey, wouldn't be a bad idea to reach out to Sam DeMarco. But it never happened.
Never happened. Never happened. Okay.
Wow.
And and then you saw, just a couple months into her term, you know, she tried to usurp the authority of the Board of Elections.
Right, and you took her on.
And I took her on and took and filed suit in court, and we won. You know, and got a consent decree that she had to go to the Board of Elections. So, but look, I think she's a nice woman, but I think she's in way over her head, and I don't think that they're doing a great job. And I think you saw a lot of that with the debate over the tax increase. You know, here you had, they come out, they decide they're gonna raise 46.5%. I can tell you in the meeting I was in, she didn't even attend. It was her staff that gave us this thing. And I told them that, I said, hey guys, you're not gonna be able to swing this. I said, I wanna see line item on all this information, all these initiatives that you're talking about, how much is being spent on what? I said, because the public is gonna wanna know, right? It took them over a month and repeated requests, my going public, you know, in many cases on the Marty Griffin show, to get those folks to actually send me some of that information. So then they went and told all of Human Services that if they didn't get this 46.5% tax increase, everybody was going to be laid off and the people were going to lose their jobs and everything like that. And so we were having people come down to the Gold Room. We were having people you know, stand up and make statements and everything like that. But none of it was true because we weren't looking to cut anything. We were just looking to reduce the rate of growth. They were increasing. They were increasing the budget for human services by more than it had been increased in the total of the last 5 years combined. Okay. So human services this year, when they got, they didn't get the money they wanted, but they got a 36% tax increase. Human services got $107 million more. And then they promptly turned around and they cut some of the reimbursements they give for mental health services. And you saw it cost, it may have cost, you know, one man his life.
Right.
You know, here back in December. So so I don't think they're doing a great job.
So looking back, you spent almost a decade on county council and all that time in a minority. So you have to have a unique path and a strategy when you operate from a minority position. Again, we went back and talked about it's the bully pulpit. It's take it to the people. Let the press get involved. And it's hard. I need to just name one. And if you want to name more than one, that's fine. But if it wasn't for Sam DeMarco being in this position, it wouldn't have happened. Like, what are you most proud of in that decade? How do you leave here? Is there a particular issue or two that really gravitates and that says that defines my time on county council?
There are a ton of things. I mean, you know, working together with Rich and the administration, we received over 5 credit upgrades, right? We were able to take and refinance the county's debt without extending the term, just taking advantage of the better increased credit rating, right? And save the folks $26.5 million. You know, I worked with Rich. He gave me $1 million in 2022 and $1 million in 2023 to take and distribute body-worn cameras to municipal police departments that didn't have the funds to be able to buy them for their officers.
They were very
helped over 1,000 officers get body-worn cameras. And I believe that those things not only help the officers, but they also help the communities, you know, and help build trust between the community and the law enforcement community there as well, right? And so, I mean, it's things like that. I mean, I'm very proud of the work we did out at the airport. They're building a $1.5 billion terminal out there with no taxpayer dollars. Okay, this is going to be a state-of-the-art, world-class facility. You know, we opened Neighborhood 91.
So how are you able to do that? Let's go back to that. How are you able to do that without raising taxes, or where did you find the money for that?
Sure. What happens is the airlines charge each passenger that flies a per-passenger employment fee.
Correct.
That covers landing fees, gate fees, things of that nature, right? You have the parking and concessions that go to the airport authority. Right. That goes into that, right? You also have gaming revenue.
Oh, it goes right
to
the airport.
They get a portion. They get a small, like, I'm not sure if it might be.
There's a formula.
$12 million a year,
right?
And then also, but the big thing, the key here, is the drilling that took place. It's the natural
gas. When did that start? Because it
started
your term.
Before me. It started before, yeah. So it might have been 2014, 2015. I'm not sure exactly when, but
has it expanded over time? Or is it about the same amount of money every year?
Well, that's changed, okay? Because that all fluctuates based upon the gas prices,
right? Exactly.
And things like that, right? But stuff that in addition to that we did out there, we also built a microgrid. So they took the natural gas that was underneath the airport, and it powers its own power facility there that provides electricity, heating, and cooling. So the airport is totally off the grid. Okay, if we had a big power outage, Greater Pittsburgh International Airport continues to operate and run.
Now I'm going to defer to myself here on a personal question. Maybe the listeners aren't as interested in it, but I travel extensively around the country, and one of my favorite airport hotels is the Hyatt out there. But now I realize it's going to be in the middle of nowhere. I mean, what happens when that building goes away? Do they have to move that Hyatt, or what happens? I mean, it's not going to be close to the airport anymore.
Yeah, you know what? I don't have the answer to that.
That's a question.
I mean, but we have hotels all over.
Yeah, but it's always
here,
nice
right?
to stay there and then go right to the gate. And I'm thinking Hyatt might be willing to build another one closer to the terminal.
You know, who knows? We'll see. Right?
Because that's completely going away. The existing way you show up.
What's going on? Yeah, the landside terminal.
The landside goes away. Yes, does that become like parking? Or what does it become, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what they're going to do with that. I know it's up for debate. It may probably end up being parking. Okay,
I'm sure there's a website you could see.
But they just built a 4,300
renderings
space garage.
Okay.
Out there, okay? 4,300 spaces.
Oh, wow.
Right? That's right across that you can walk to from the terminal, you know, to that garage.
Oh, that's okay? Connected. That's great.
Right. And it's also going to have the rental cars, rental car facilities in that garage.
Well, I'm shouting out to the Hyatt. I hope they build one near the new airport.
Well, hey, hey, Mr. Hyatt, if you're listening, you know, Keith Schmidt, you have one satisfied customer that wants to and wants to stay there, you know, and he's not even raving about the you know, the bedding or anything. Yeah, you know, his heavenly bed. I think was that Marriott or whomever, whatever.
That was Marriott.
Yeah, but hey, folks, we're gonna have to take a break here, pay the bills in just a moment, but we'll be right back after the break here. Keith Schmidt is interviewing me, but yet I seem to be doing all the talking.
That's how all right? It works.
Right back after the break, folks. Folks, we're back after the break here. I'm listening to The Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and Talk 99.1 FM. This is your host, Sam DeMarco, and I'm here with Keith Schmidt, and we're having an interesting conversation.
Where'd that first half hour go? It always speeds on by. It's hard to believe we're already in the second half hour. I actually have a lot of stuff that I'm not even going to get to, I can tell you, so I'm going to get right to it, Sam. We're going to stay a little bit longer on your role with county government, and then we're going to pivot to your political positions and give us some insight on the past and the present and the future. But my last question, I guess, on county council is we're now, I guess, the first election was probably 99 when they changed from the three commissioners to a county executive, the first one being the late Jim Roddy, the late great Jim Roddy, and then 15 county council, 13 seats, and two at large. We're a quarter of a century in. I think it's okay. And you spent over 10 years on that.
I was in my 10th year.
All right, so you were there for almost 45% of that time. Is it working? If we had to do it all over again, would we keep the old form of government? And not only is it working, does it work for the minority in the county as well as the commissioner's system worked?
You know, it's hard for me to say because I didn't spend a lot of time or attention under the, you know, with the previous commissioner system. I wasn't involved in politics back then. I was out there busy working, trying to make a living and feed a family. I would say, though, that certainly in a county where the registration advantage for Democrats is almost 2-1, you know, it's less. I mean, they just did the recent maintenance list and cleanup, so now they're down to 500,000 Democrats and 264,000 Republicans. So it's not quite 2-1, okay?
Okay.
But when you have something that's that gives them that large of a registration advantage, it makes it difficult or a Republican to take and win in Allegheny County if you're going to run countywide, right?
Sure.
And so you have to find the right kind of candidate. And I thought we'd found them in 2023 with Joe Rocky.
Absolutely.
You know, and Joe ran a hell of a race, and he was able to get the cross-party appeal. So he got the number of Democrat votes he needed, got the number of independent votes he needed. What we didn't get was the number of Republican votes we needed. And that's one of the things that, as I leave, is the role of the county chair, that I'm disappointed in. And only 112,000 Republicans came out and voted in that election.
Oh,
when
wow.
we had 264,000 that were registered, and we raised $3 million
in the general election,
only 112,000 voted. Yes.
Wow. I didn't know that.
And Joe lost by what, like 8,500, 9,000 votes.
And the difference was largely the mail-in ballots, because I think the people that showed up that day we won.
Overwhelmingly.
And then we came up short on the mail-ins, but that lower percentage of actual registered Republicans. So it was sitting there for the taking.
Absolutely, right. All the things that these folks are complaining about today, they're complaining about that huge tax increase that she levied on the county, okay? They're complaining because she just announced earlier this week that the county was going to give $200,000 to groups to help resettle refugees here. You know, folks are up in arms about that. All of that stuff could have been avoided. All these shenanigans, these things that are taking place on the Board of Elections, you know, which they created. The county was broke, but they had to spend a ton of money with these satellite voting offices and ballot return sites. And basically, that's nothing more than a taxpayer-funded Democrat get-out-the-vote plan, okay? All of that could have been avoided if Republicans had come out and voted. But, you know, you had folks, and I hear it today from, again, the uninformed, okay, uninformed and basically, you know, not smart folks. Well, Joe Rocky said he wouldn't support Trump. Oh, okay. Joe Rocky ran the race he needed to run in the district he was in order to take and win that race. Okay. Sure. And you know, again, our folks, you know, failed to recognize that. And, you know, we say elections have consequences, and they do. And now here in Allegheny County, we have to live with those consequences.
Well, let's pivot. That's a good, I mean, you're talking about the political motivation of Republicans coming out in an election that's not an even year, you know, more of a local election, even though it's a county election, it's local. It's not running for Congress or United States Senate or governor or president. And we definitely gotta jumpstart that. Now, and I'm gonna dig into that. But as we pivot to the political side, your time as our esteemed GOP chair here in the most highly registered Republican county in the Commonwealth, I want to go to the origins of Sam DeMarco a little bit for the listener's sake, and quite frankly for mine, because I don't think I know the answer to this. I mean, I always say when I talk about myself is my origin back in 1980, it wasn't exactly a big Democratic county, but I was a volunteer and I got to meet the likes of Elsie Hillman, which was a larger-than-life figure, William Christopher and others. And because I was a teenage a volunteer and looked like I was really into the body politic, they helped me secure a internship for the Reagan campaign for president in 1980. Mm-hmm. And it was that, them paying attention to me. And even as a young man, a teenager, thinking that you could have a voice and you could maybe make a difference and given some responsibility that you rarely would get anywhere else but in politics because you're always looking for manpower. And I got a spark and I never looked back. And that's 45 years ago. Give me your journey. Like, tell me your journey. I mean, you're a consequential player in the body politic here in Pennsylvania. But where did it begin?
Look, as a kid, you know, in school, I was a scholar, you know, meaning that it was in like advanced placement courses and things like that, you know, and I was very interested in politics at the time. I mean, and I'm sure your parents probably told you that anything in America was, anything you want to do was achievable in America,
sure.
Right?
The American
you
dream,
grew
right?
Up to be, you could grow up to be president someday if you wanted, right? So I dreamed of growing up to become a lawyer and, you know, becoming a politician and things like that. When I was in school, I was involved in student government, student United Nations, that kind of deal. You know, went away to the Marine Corps, you know, came back, wanted to play football at the University of Pittsburgh. That didn't work out so well for me. You know, defensive tackles at like 227 pounds. You know, that's not going to get the job done there, right?
Right?
And I was too slow to play defensive end, so I was sort of screwed there. But anyway, so, you know, when I was in school, into college, I was working as a banquet waiter at the Hilton Hyatt and William Penn Hotels downtown, you know, so
sure.
The big banquets, I was out there carrying my tray.
Well, of course.
With all those dinners on it and that kind of deal. And then my first job out of there, I became a union glazer.
What's
so a glazer is someone that works with glass, architectural metals, and things like that. The union was a local union 751, and a friend of my father's who'd worked with him at PPG Industries, he was in management, so they had an opportunity. They had a seat that they were able to give on the when the apprentices got hired. So they hired 10 apprentices, and I became one of them. So I was an apprentice. I worked on Pittsburgh's Renaissance 2 when it was coming up. So the Oxford Center, PPG Place, and Mellon Center, which was originally was coming up with the Dravo building. So I worked on those, got on steady with a company called Watson Standard. And then Watson Standard ended up going out of business. And I got thrown back into the union hall and started looking and say, okay, what can I do for a living? And another friend, a guy that I played football with at Pitt, Ron Sams, his father, Ron, was a general manager for Frank Fuhrer Wholesale Company.
Okay.
And so at this time, 1988, Coors was coming east of the Mississippi for the first time.
Interesting.
You know, so Frank Fuhrer Wholesale Company got the franchise for 8 counties. And so they added a team. They hired a team to sell Coors beer. And I was on that initial team. That was my first sales job. So I did that for about 18 months, then got into the office equipment business, where I worked with a gentleman that had been a star football player at the University of Pittsburgh and had been drafted by the Steelers. That was Steve Fidel. He was the vice president there, but I ended up getting hired at Allegheny Business Machines. And I ended up spending 27 years in the office equipment business with Allegheny Business Machines, and they became Icon Office Solutions, and then finally got bought by Ricoh. You know, so my role in politics, you know, while at the time in business, I didn't want to get involved. I was focused on trying to make a living and, you know, buy homes and raise a family, things like that. But back in 2008, the presidential election, okay? Well, in 2000, you know, George Bush and Al Gore, you know, I got involved, started just giving some money
Okay.
To the RNC and donating money and things like that. In 2004 with Kerry, I was going out and seeing Bush when he came to the convention center and all that.
Sure.
2008, you know, I voted for John McCain and Sarah Palin, of course. I've been a Republican my entire life, from the time I was eligible to vote at 18 years old. But, you know, at least I was proud of my – the night that Obama came out, and he and his wife at Grant Park, along with Joe Biden, and they walked that stage there.
Sure.
You know, I wasn't – I was unhappy that my guys lost. But I was happy at least because I thought – I was proud of my country. We'd elected a black man to be the president of the United States. And I was hoping that we would be able to get beyond this racial divide, you know, to be able to achieve Martin Luther King's dream, okay? And then what do we see? We see Barack Obama turn into just a terrible president and somebody who actually deepened the divide, you know? So I decided I had to get involved. So if you remember, it was a very sad time and depressing. They were putting out things that said Democrats were going to be in power for the next 40 years or something. And so I went to a Glenn Beck, We Surround Them viewing party that was at a place called Viola's in Moon Township. Mm. I walk in the door there because my friends had invited me. I wasn't going to go, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I'm driving around. I say, oh, I'll stop in. There were like 170 people jammed into this bar.
Wow.
Watching these TVs. Well, he did this. And that night, they created what was called Veterans and Patriots United. And again, my buddy, he dragged me into everything. You know, I was in a motorcycle club. You know, I bought a Harley, you know. I was an investor in a Pittsburgh Fight Club, which was an MMA. So he dragged me into all kinds of stuff. So he was trying to pull me into this, and I was like resistant. But by the time the end of 2009 came around, I was watching what was taking place in Washington. You know, you had that $862 billion stimulus. Obama said elections have consequences. We don't need any help from Republicans, he told Eric Cantor, okay? You saw the automobile companies, you know, they declared bankruptcy, and you saw the secured bondholders, which are basically pensioners, you know, teachers, firefighters, police officers getting, getting screwed while the thing was being given to the unions.
So this whole organization was born out of opposition to the agenda in Washington.
Yes, exactly. That's how that's veterans and patriots. That's how they came across. And we were all veterans.
Oh, sure.
So my friend Mick that started this, he was a fighter pilot in the Marine Corps. You know, a bunch of us were veterans. So I got involved there, say, October, November 2009. By April 2010, I was the president of the organization.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
In this chapter, or what was it?
Yeah, this year, right. We had 500 members here.
Okay, you had 500 members locally.
So we held, like, candidate forums. So this is back when Governor Tom Corbett was running.
Sure.
You know, for governor and things like that. So we did a lot of that. We also fought back against Obamacare. But it was that fight that made me realize that, hey, if you want to get involved, you can't just go out and hold up a sign and protest. You have to roll up your sleeves.
It's not a spectator sport.
Exactly. You got to get into the arena. So that's why in 2012, I ran for my local committee in North Fayette. I was elected to be a local precinct committee person. I ran to be the committee chair. I was elected to that. In 2014, and folks just come to me. It's a curse of competency. In 2014, they came to me and said, you know, there's problems with state committee. You need to run for state committee. Judy Brown, if you remember Judy,
sure,
from Upper St. Clair.
Absolutely.
And so I ran for state committee. I was elected for the first time in 2014 there. Okay. So, you know, we talk about three times the charm.
Right.
I was elected three times to county council, three times to be the RCAC chair, and three times to state committee.
And just recently, you've just... what do they call it? The caucus. You chaired the caucus of state committee,
right, on
in
state
this
committee,
region
in 2018. Right, from 2018 to 2022, I was the chairman of the Southwest Caucus. You know, and then just recently here, this past couple weeks ago, I was elected to be the treasurer for the entire state party.
Which is nice. You'll be able to continue in that role even with your new role with the senator.
Exactly.
And because as being the sitting chair of the caucus. That gave you a position, so I heard we were able to hand that to the First Lady of Republican politics in this region.
Absolutely, the grand dame of Republican politics. Here. So, yeah, so I'd won the at-large seat there, yeah. So in 2014, I ran for state committee, was elected. In 2015, they came to me and said, you know, Heather decided she wasn't going to run for re-election, and so I seized that opportunity, ran for county council, was elected there, and that was a start. In 2019, when Raza stepped down, folks were saying that, hey, the two gentlemen that were looking to fill the role, They didn't believe that they had the strategic vision, that things were focused on tactics, by taking the party where we wanted to go. So they asked me to run. And I'm like, no, I can't do it. I don't have the bandwidth, right? And so then all these people all pull me down. They have the big meeting, and they're telling me, look, we'll help you. You know,
I was in that meeting.
Yes, you were. Yes.
I was in that
meeting. Yes. You were there. Mike Devaney, yeah, Rob Bessio.
I remember
Marianne
well.
Malloy, Rob Kenya, Randy Lockman Jr.
We're out of you all now, just so you
yes.
know.
Yes.
So we created this.
So they, so I said, okay, I'll fill the remainder of the term. And then, you know, just a couple months in, we held a reception where I introduced Sean Parnell to be our candidate to run against Connor Lamb for Congress. And then a few months after that, we had our first Lincoln Day dinner under me, where I had Ted Cruz as the speaker and raised $250,000. And from there,
was that, at the Hilton?
That was at the Omni William Penn.
I mean, that's right. Packed. I remember that.
We had people up on the balcony. Yes, yes.
You put actually tables yes, up in the yes. balcony.
So, it's a again, the curse of competency. You're like, you're stuck. You're there, right? So, but I've been doing those. And again, as I was saying earlier in the show, I can't thank the people enough for giving me the opportunity to serve them. And I can't thank the Republicans out there, our registered Republican voters, who gave me the opportunity to lead, you know, this party. And I listen, there are a lot of folks out there that won't agree with me, but every decision I made, I felt was in the best, you know, was in the best interest of our party, to try to advance our party and to move us forward. And that brings me like to today here. I don't know how much time we have, but you know, I wrote an article in the Post, an op-ed in the Post Gazette a couple weeks ago. But the underlying message I want to get across is this. We have to be united to win, okay? Coalitions win. Factions do not. And despite all the success we had this past November, where we elected Donald Trump to be the 47th president of the United States and J.D. Vance to be the vice president, despite the success we had where Dave McCormick was elected the U.S. senator, ending the Casey dynasty here in Pennsylvania, despite the fact that we won the three statewide row offices, you know, maintained our margin in the Pennsylvania State Senate, you know, and maintained, didn't lose a single incumbent, you know, or a single seat in the Democrat-led House, right?
Right.
And you still have factions out there claiming that we're doing everything wrong, and they have all the answers, okay? They talk about being from the grassroots. Folks, grassroots, all it means is it's a movement coming, emanating from the people, okay? All of us are grassroots, and they try to take and they try to put labels on folks, these factions that try to split you apart, try to divide you, and try to cause trouble. And they'll say, well, you know, so-and-so got elected because of the grassroots. Well, nobody owns the grassroots.
No.
And I can tell you that I worked as hard as anybody, and I know John worked harder than anybody, right, to help get our candidates elected. So did the majority of the members of our committee. So for folks on the outside to say, well, they're establishment, or if it wasn't for us, no, it takes all of us. We need you. We need them. We need our activists. We need the folks that are outside the party, but we also need all the people that are inside the party if we're going to be successful.
Let's learn from history, though, also, because I think we're on the same page here. You know, the growth with veterans and patriots was an anti-Obama movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this conversation with John before the show. I said, we have to not repeat the mistakes of two-term Democrats, both Obama and Clinton. When all the energy of the Democratic Party was centered on them, was centered on the presidency, and they did, and during that time, we gained more state houses, local races, county, everything underneath them, and they were still equal to us because they were such giants. But when they were gone, they had nothing. The infrastructure was gone. So I even say there's a certain frustration with me. You've seen a great growth in registration in Pennsylvania, whatnot.
But, absolutely.
But have we capitalized enough on those county races when we needed the turnout for Rocky?
Well, let me take a step back, okay? Take a step back here, right?
Go ahead.
So the Veterans and Patriots United, the Tea Party movement wasn't anti-Obama. The Tea Party movement was focused on limited government, okay, free markets.
Yep.
You know, we wanted to take and reduce the debt.
Oh, sure.
Okay,
I remember that.
Drivers of that movement. It wasn't focused on just resistance or opposition like we see today with a group on the left called Indivisible. All right.
Right.
But we have made tremendous strides. Back in 2010, when Tom Corbett was elected governor. Democrats had an almost 1.2 million registered voter advantage in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Do you know, as of today, when you take out inactive voters, Democrats only have a registration advantage of 89,000.
I said it was under 100.
89,000.
So it's 89 if you take out yes. inactive people.
Yes.
Okay.
So we
hard
made,
to believe.
We have made tremendous strides, okay? And what our folks fail to understand is that we have to stick together. You know, who was the patriot that during the Revolutionary War that said, "United we fall, United we stand, divided we fall." Okay. This is why it's important for us to stick together. Many of these folks, I talk about being misinformed and uninformed, and in some cases, I'll point out some of these people are just plain stupid, okay? But, you know, they attack their local elected officials and call them rhinos, okay? Because for whatever reason or silly thing that they come up with. But you know what? Those local elected officials are people that have shown that they can get elected. They've shown that they have the ability to raise the money, that they have the retail skills, that 100%. They're able to go out and win votes and get elected, right? But so what do these our factions do? They attack the Republicans, not the Democrats. They attack the Republicans, okay? And then you ask them, who are your heroes? And they'll tell you, but they always name somebody that's not from here because the person they name lives someplace and represents a district or a state, in which case the dog catcher could get elected because they have an R.
Right.
By their name.
Correct.
The point being is, you've heard the saying, and maybe it was Tip O'Neill, remember, but all politics is local.
Absolutely.
Okay? Candidates need to represent their districts. And as we look to field candidates moving into the future, we need to take and elect or nominate candidates who can appeal to all segments in that district in order, or at least to enough, in order to win the vote.
Yeah, and how far we came, and we had a very dismal 2022. The midterm for Biden didn't pay off. We were doom and gloom. We were thinking—
Right, red wave disappeared.
And then you just gave me a litany of people 2 years later that we swept into office.
Yes.
I mean, we're finally focused on the fact that now that 89,000, we're so close. And let me tell you, if it's 89,000, then we're ahead because there is no swing Republicans. There's only swing Democrats. So we have a majority. Now the time is, as far as I'm concerned, to start looking at local councils, school boards, county governments around us. That's how you build a national party from the ground up. And we haven't done enough of that. And I hope we take advantage of this popularity at the top to really get results near the bottom with the local races.
No, I think we are. And this is why I want to speak to our activists out there. I want to speak to people who are just listening and want to get involved but aren't involved. But it's extremely important. I mean, we've made a lot of progress here. In 2022, when we had the election for chairman at the time, we only had like 450 elected members, okay? We have 901 that are eligible to vote tonight. So
when did you took over? You're talking about?
In 2022.
In 2022.
The people that ran for office, okay, that were elected as committee people was like 454.
Okay.
It's 901 right now.
So you've doubled it in 2 years.
We've doubled the size. Yes. Yes.
That's unbelievable.
Okay. We have more people out there, okay, that we want to bring into the tent, but we have folks out there that make complaints, okay? Now, we're having a reorganization meeting. I'm stepping down. Today is the RCAC election. People are going out to Fleet Street. They're casting their ballots and the whole bit. And they will elect, you know, what hopefully here, Jason Ritchie, to be the next chairman of the Republican Party, okay? But his race wasn't initially uncontested. You had two other folks that jump into this. Now, these folks, one, a gentleman by the name of Doug Austin. Doug ran against me in 2022. And he had the support of one of the factions, this Team Red organization.
Sure.
And, you know, they fought very hard, you know, claiming that I didn't do enough to stop the steal in 2020 and all these different things. Again, they have no evidence, no basis of anything, but they make these claims. But anyway, so he came close. I think I beat him by like 30 or 40 votes. So I gave him the opportunity at that meeting to speak to the committee. And he just said, no, that's okay. And he left. And I haven't seen him, you know, since that day. So here's a guy, no money, no time, no activity, no doing anything, okay? And then this other guy, this Tony Golombeski, sends out a letter to everybody in the committee claiming that there's a lack of transparency in the voter roster, a lack of an independent election board, a lack of transparency in the vote count. Ladies and gentlemen, anybody on the committee that was even considering voting for that guy needs to remove their head from the oven right now, okay? Because he is just, I don't know if this guy's able to read, but our bylaws are posted on the website. The transparency and everything. Lack of an independent election board. You don't have independent election boards. The bylaws, the rules that govern the party tell you that the solicitor does this job. This wasn't an appointment by me to appoint a board or anything like that. And then a lack of transparency in the vote count. I mean, please, these people are all able to have observers. Folks, you know, it's just frustrating for me when you have two people who were going to go down to a humiliating defeat, you know, on Saturday. This, instead of being able to face the music, instead of being able to run or campaign for an election, they choose to drop out and then come up with excuses and cast stones. And you know, I just hope for the folks out there who aren't really involved, okay? If you look to get involved, please, you need to look at who you follow and who your leaders are, because there are false prophets out there.
We're almost out of time. I have to interrupt you just to say thank you for allowing me to have this conversation with you today. Listen, you're a true public servant. I know you got no money for being chair of the GOP and did a great job. You got a small stipend for county council, but you've been a giant in the GOP, and we're just so happy to hear that you're going to stay involved with the new senator, and we wish you all the best, my good friend. Well, all the very best. Listen, thank you for your service.
Listen, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And listen, I believe Senator McCormick has the opportunity. He's going to be a transformative senator here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and do great things for the people. And for me to play even just a small role in assisting him in his endeavors is something that I just couldn't pass up. For all the folks out there, again, thank you for your trust and your confidence in me. Thank you for your votes. And listen, I'm going to continue to work on your behalf. I will see you around.
Godspeed, Sam.
Thank you.